Thanks for tuning into After Dark with Rob and Andrew, which is available on America Out Loud's iHeartRadio channel, along with streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please be sure to search for America Out Loud. In addition to that, we're available on AmericaOutLoud.news, which has thousands of podcasts and articles updated daily, and we always appreciate it when you share on social media. You can hit the drop-down menu, go to After Dark with Rob and Andrew, get our full archive of shows, hundreds of shows. It was over at AmericaOutLoud.news. As I always say, we appreciate it when you share on social media. Got a little different show for you guys tonight than normal. We've got on our friend, astrophysicist, TEDx speaker, number one best-selling author, and sustainable leadership leader, Joshua Spodek, is going to be joining us once again. Definitely looking forward to that different appearance from Josh each and every time, and we always appreciate having him on. And it's been a long time. It's been since last April since we talked to Josh. Last we spoke to him, we were discussing his garbage policy and how little of it that he uses, how he's teaching other people to live a more sustainable life, use less garbage and recycle and all that kind of stuff. So we're going to get updated with what's been going on with Josh. Before we get to Josh, how are you doing tonight, Rob?
Andrew, I am doing great. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning into the show tonight. We've had Josh on the show before, as you mentioned. I think we've had him on a total of six times. The last time he was on almost a year ago, when the topic was Living the Simple Life Off the Grid with Josh Spodek. And this was a show when he was telling us that he had decided to go off the grid, no electricity. Everything was being powered, I think, by solar energy. I've visited with Josh before, and I've also been on his podcast. It's rather interesting, his lifestyle, what he's doing. And I wouldn't necessarily say it's a lifestyle. It's just a way, this is just who Josh is. He isn't one of those climate change extremists, but he lives by what he says. And Andrew, actually, I was thinking the other day about Josh when I reached out to him to come on the show. And he and I, we've spoken about this before. I look at his approach to the whole climate hoorah that everyone is talking about. And his approach is completely different than most extremists, I want to say. He lives by his words. He lives by what he's saying. And it's just a way of life for him. Whereas you have others who are preachy. They want you to do something, and they're not necessarily doing it. You look at a lot of our political leaders who are saying green cars and you shouldn't fly and carbon footprint, we need to be careful of that. And then you look at the climate czar, the former climate czar who was, what was his name? John Kerry. And he's carting off in these Gulfstream private jets. And when he was questioned about it, he said, oh, well, I need to get to where I need to go, you know, within a matter of minutes. I can't just wait around. And you hear so many others saying the exact same thing. And I look at today's society. I look at the illegals that are coming across the border. And I look at all the traffic pollution and where they're staying. And you look at the decay. And I'm thinking, well, why aren't these climate alarmists concerned about that? Because they're adding to the problem, so to speak, when they're coming here and they're going into these neighborhoods and they're not cleaning up after themselves, but no one wants to talk about it. See, I like to bring everything full circle. Now, I'm not blaming them totally or saying that they're just polluters, but that's part of the problem when you look at it. I also look at our competitor, China and India. The U.S. has, I mean, almost like decreased our carbon footprint and society, but no one is looking at India or China. No one is telling them, are you going to reduce? And if we are, it's just lip service because there's no action or consequences to them not reducing their carbon footprint. But here in America, we have to browbeat its citizens and say that you're bad. You can't eat beef. You got to get rid of cows because of they're polluting with the gases. It's crazy. And then you look at people like Bill Gates, and who's supposed to be at the forefront of, we're trying to make certain that we don't have too many people here. We need to eat grasshoppers and we need to eat grass, and not to the extreme. I'm just making this up right now. But when you look at their lifestyle, they're living in mansions. They're driving these expensive cars. They're flying around the world, but they want to tell us, this is what you should do. And I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are turned off. Now I'm getting political, of course, turned off to Joe Biden because he says one thing and he does another. And it's the almost the party of the elitist, everyone in that group, because they think they know more than we do. And we should listen to them because they have all the answers to all the problems that ail us in society. So to tie it all in, again, I was thinking about Josh and looking at his lifestyle, very simple lifestyle, nothing extravagant from what I've seen. Well, he could be, doing something on the side, but I seriously doubt it. He seems to be, true to his word. I look at a lot of his newsletters and the guests that he's have that he that comes on it that come on his show, and he seems to be living by what he's saying, especially with being off the grid. And he'll, share that with us exactly what he means by living off the grid. I don't know if it's like completely. But and then the food choice, not eating packaged food, just eating nuts and fruits, vegetables, going to the farmer's market. So I like having him on to share with us, what he's been up to. Like I said, it's almost been a year from now. And without further ado, Josh, how are you tonight?
Great. Glad to be here again. I can't believe it's been this long.
Yeah, it has. Time flies by. I guess time flies by when you're having fun. We've been doing our thing. And you've been doing yours, like you said, when you had reached out to me that you finished your book, I think, and you're now waiting for it to go through, I guess, editing and then publication.
Yes,
And you
that's
have a
a
show, you
huge,
have a
huge
show
step
that's
forward.
out there. So tell us about that.
Let's see. I'll start with a book that I'll be quick here because there's not much if for me, it's a big advance to finish substantive edits. Now it's going to copy edits. And then there's the whole back end stuff of distribution. But up until now, it's been a lot of, how do I put it, figuring out what I want to say. It's open-ended, so you never know when, I never knew when I was going to finish. But copy edits is like closed-ended. It's just fix the grammar, fix the punctuation. And so it will come out later this year, sometime between the summer and the fall, or around summer, fall. And yeah, a huge step forward and weight off my shoulders. But then, of course, there's the marketing and everything, the launch that comes next. So it's just a short respite.
And can
And
you t t I'm sorry, can you tell us just a little bit what the book is about?
yeah, it's about what you're talking about, except not the living it. I've been living more and more sustainably for a good 10 years now, and that was after already being vegetarian and not going out of my way to pollute, but really living, practicing sustainability leadership, which is different than sustainability. Sustainability is more like engineering or market incentives. Leadership is about hearts and minds. It's about people and role models, things like that. And no one's really doing that. As you point out, I'm as frustrated as anyone that there are people out there saying, here's what you have to do. Oh, but don't notice that I'm actually doing the opposite. I don't believe you can lead others to live by values that you live the opposite of. And it's infuriating because how can one not conclude or think if you're saying to do X, but you're not doing it, if you believed what you said, you would do it, but you're not. So you probably don't believe what you're saying. So why are you doing what you're doing? I guess it's probably for things that you said, like it's going to get you elected. It's going to get you control over government or people. It's going to get people scared. And I think that lack of it, I'll use a big word here, that lack of integrity, I think it leads to losing credibility. And that's not what I'm about. There's another message that's really big out there, which is we have to sacrifice. We have to give up. And I would not suggest that others follow in what I'm doing if I thought it was going to make their lives worse. Only once I started practicing it and doing it myself, originally the first thing, as you mentioned, was avoiding packaged food. Only when I started doing it and I found that, contrary to my expectations, I saved money, the food was more delicious, it was more convenient. And only then did I realize there's intrinsic motivation here to be had. And now I can say, if I believe that, well, I do these workshops. So people go through the workshops, they come back and they change in ways and as much more than I expected. And they come back and they're full of gratitude. They thank me. They tell me, here's someone else. Can they take your next workshop? That's very different than anything that I've heard. So it's about how I view things, how I came to view things, and how others can follow based on intrinsic motivation, not Bangladesh is going to be underwater. Therefore, this is what you must do. Here are all these facts. The facts might be right. They might be accurate. They might be reproducible. That doesn't mean it's going to motivate people. I mean, you can tell a smoker they're going to get cancer. That doesn't mean they're going to stop. So it's a big shift in that. I know that that's not like a, but it's for people who they recognize that there's a problem. They want to act. They might not be sure what they want to do. My definition of leadership is helping other people do what they already want to do, but haven't figured out how. And I want to help them if they believe that there's a problem. I'm not going to convince them if there's not. If they believe there is one, I want to help them act on it.
And Josh, what would you say the problem is? You mentioned you said the problem. What is the problem? How are you identifying the problem?
That's changed a lot over the course of this, because at first I would think we're heading toward a collapse. It seems like there's a good chance that in our lifetimes, the amount of plastic in the ocean, the fish die-offs and, you know, the extinctions that we could, the human population could not of our intent suffer a lot of people dying. I think that's possible. I can't prove it. So that's not really enough to go on. What I can tell you is that pollution right now, here's one number that for me is very meaningful. According to The Lancet, the British peer-reviewed journal, about 9 million people a year are dying from breathing polluted air. Now, that's not they're in a factory that's polluted. That's just breathing air that they can't, you know, you can't stop breathing. And that's leading to people die. In the United States, we have places called Cancer Alley in between Baton Rouge and New Orleans, where people are getting cancer. And we know where it's coming from. It's because of the oil refineries. What I realized is that we're hurting each other here and now. We are destroying, pollution destroys life, liberty, and property. And as I mentioned to you, when we were preparing for this, I've been going through a lot of conservative literature, and the idea of having a government that protects life, liberty, and property, that, like, I think people want that. And if we are not protecting life, liberty, and property, it's very easy to give up hope. It's very easy for things to collapse, not the population to collapse, but society to, like, I mean, going back to John Locke or Edmund Burke, that these are things that are happening, like we are doing it. When I pollute, I'm destroying other people's life, liberty, and property, and no one's stopping me. But what is government for if not that? So it's not some future thing for me anymore. It's here now. I mean, I wrote the book to say it better than I just said it just now, but it's a here and now thing of social, that we're hurting each other's life, liberty, and property. And I think we should do something about that. And I think the consequences, if we don't, is that we have this feeling of eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. And we go for shallow enjoyments, but at the expense of family and community and free markets. I mean, if I'm polluting, if I make something, and in the process of making it, I'm polluting, the people that breathe the air, say I'm releasing some poisonous gas, some smoke, the people who are breathing that in, they did not consent to that. That's not a free market means I consent to something that when you do something that affects me. But if I don't, that's coercion. In a free market, there's a good chance that if I solve a problem and I can now sell something because I may maybe make some product better. In a free market, we exchange my product for your money, and we both consent. We both benefit. The more I sell, the more good I've done for the world. But in a coercive market, and then the people who solve the problems best in a free market, resources get allocated to the people who solve problems best. But in a coercive market, yes, people who solve problems will also, funds will be allocated to them, but also people coerce the most will get the most profit. And if they believe that they're in a free market when they're not, they're going to say they're very successful because they're making the world a better place when they're actually coercing people more. Again, people who are solving problems do get wealth, but also people who coerce the most do. And that's a big problem too, especially if people don't realize that they're doing it.
Well, you said a lot there. And something that you said, and I think that we will get into a little later on in the show, because we're almost, I guess, a commercial break, is that one, You've been reading a lot of conservative thoughts. And when you're looking, when you were looking at this entire thing of, I don't want to saving the climate change, whatnot, and the population pollution, and the population. Let me see, I want to get it right. I wrote it down here. You had mentioned about, hold on, about the liberty, which are pretty much conservative ideas. So I want to ask you later on, are you moving over to our side a little bit? Are you seeing what we've been saying and trying to do? And I want to pick that up on the other side of the commercial break.
Yeah, you guys are tuned into After Dark with Rob and Andrew. It's is available Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, or 6 p.m. on the West Coast. You can find our full archive of shows over at AmericaOutloud.news. You can also find us by going to any of the streaming apps, typing in America Out Loud, and you'll see the full archive of shows from America Out Loud, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, whatever it is that you use. We are easy to find. Please like and subscribe. We'll be back with more Joshua Spodek after this quick break.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
And we're back with the second half of After Dark. And our guest tonight is Josh Spodek. And one of the things I want to pick back on, and I was looking at my notes when I was asking him the question when we went to commercial break, and I unfortunately couldn't read my own writing because I was trying to write, take such copious notes. But you had mentioned, you said that pollution destroys life, liberty, and property. And it's like one of the conservative values or concerns is protecting life, protecting liberty, and protecting property, free market, capitalism. I then said that, is it possible that you are awakening somewhat to conservatism and you're seeing things the way we see them? When we're saying, you know, all this stuff, this baloney, we're concerned about the environment, that the push that the left is putting out there, we don't exactly buy it, because we should be able to sit down and eat our steak. And as you mentioned, what you're doing, you're not saying that you recommend that for others. It can't be something, well, he's doing it, so I'm going to do it. It has to be something that's inside of you that you realize or recognize, wait a minute, I can make the world a better place if I were to do this. And in doing so, I'm helping someone else out. And it's not by coercion, you know, but it's more so of a free market, an exchange, so to speak. So one, are you slowly seeing what conservatives have been saying? Not that you haven't been seeing it, or are you, you know, embracing those ideas of conservatism and our approach to free market and our approach to life, liberty, and property? What do you say, Josh?
There's a lot of directions I can come from here. With regard to life, liberty, and property, the way that that came in, that perspective came in was, I think I mentioned before, I see that we have to change culture. If we just change technology, but keep or legislation or market incentives, but we don't change our culture, we keep our cultural values, we'll just do what we're doing actually faster. And I don't think people get that. Now, to change culture, is it possible to change American culture, global culture? So a big role model movement for me has been abolition, because slavery had been around for 10,000 years. And it's starting with a few people in America, actually pretty close to where I grew up in Philadelphia. That's where abolitionism began. And the more that I learned, the more that I, like, one thing that I got really interested in learning about was how the 13th Amendment came to pass. And I started learning about how the framers of the Constitution, at, you know, in July 4th, 1776, 13 slave colonies became 13 slave states. But by the time of the Constitution, the northern states had become free states and the south were slave states. And they argued, they fought. And I read a bunch of books on this. And, you know, how did they come up with the three-fifths? How did they come up with the Fugitive Slave Clause? And what I found was how much the anti-slavery politicians fought incredibly hard to keep out of the Constitution, for example, the word slave. They didn't allow property in man. And that allowed openings for abolitionists and anti-slavery politicians to eventually reach the 13th Amendment and, you know, the whole history there. And I wondered, is there anything, were those debates that they had, did they ever talk about pollution? Now, I wouldn't think that they would, because pollution barely existed then. I mean, the James Watt steam engine also came out in 1776. So they didn't really know, no one could have predicted that there'd be more, that there'd be plastic, that there'd be the earth warming or things like that. And then I found, have you guys read, I did not, or if I did, I forgot, John Locke's Two Treatises on Government?
I have not. I've heard of it.
I hadn't. And it's almost like, it's like reading a blueprint for the Constitution. So John Locke, this is a century before the Constitution. Thomas Jefferson described him as one of the three most important individuals ever. And he wrote about life, liberty, and property. If people live without government, like, he wanted to know, why would people submit to a government? And without government, if you and I create stuff, that might make the world better. But if you make something that's great and I take it, you're not going to make it. So, you know, you read the whole thing to get the whole point, but a government should protect life, liberty, and property. And under those conditions and a few others, but mostly that, then it's worth it to have a government. Otherwise, a government you should rebel against. Okay, so what's property? And he looks into it a lot. And one of the things he says is, if there's something in nature, like say there's an apple in a tree and I take it, well, that means you can't get it. So when should I own it? When can I take something from nature? And he says, when you leave enough as good in common for others. I hope I get the quote just right. I don't have it in front of me. Something like that. Like, if you have to leave enough for others. And he also pointed out that, he gave an example. If there's a river and I drink from it, and you can drink from it too, I don't diminish the river by drinking it. You can drink it too. No problem. But in today's world, I don't know if you know this. I didn't know this. The Colorado River does not reach the Pacific Ocean anymore. The Tigris and Euphrates, which go through some pretty war-torn regions, also don't reach the ocean. the Jordan River doesn't reach the Dead Sea. So we seem to be violating his principles of what I call that his stewardship clause, that we're not leaving enough as good in common for others. And that's when I started realizing we have a government that by its own, I think the intent of the people who wrote the Constitution, we're violating the principles of our government. So that got me really into learning, like learning more about the framers, because John Locke was British. He lived in like a century before in England, but Jefferson talked about it. And then that got me, anyway, so this is where protecting life, liberty, and property, if you don't protect life, liberty, and property, he says the government is not legitimate and you should rebel. And, but of course I'd rather reform government to protect life, liberty, and property. And I don't know if Locke is more conservative or more liberal. I think conservatives and liberals alike view him as a founding father, not founding father, but because that's like only the people who actually wrote the Constitution, but or not just wrote the Constitution, but participated in the revolution and so forth. There's another big story I got to tell you guys about. I think I might've told you this offline back last summer that I had this client who is, he's a business client. I work with him on leadership stuff and he's a prepper, I guess you could say. He wants to make sure that if things go down, he can protect his family. And I kind of could tell, I wasn't sure that. So I asked him about some Second Amendment stuff and it came out and he invited me to go with him to his range out in New Jersey to shoot off a couple rounds. And I'd only done that once before. So I go out and I'm having a good time with him. I mean, it's not a good time, like fun. It's like a very serious thing. I don't have to tell probably many listeners here, but I'd never done that before. And, you know, I'm not flying, but I'm in a totally different culture. It's a train ride away from Manhattan, but there are no ranges in Manhattan. And I ended up on this, you know, you have to sign all these forms for safety and so forth before going onto the range. And those forms ended up me getting on their mailing list. And I got invited to this event at the Trub Bedminster Golf Club. And I thought, I've never been to anything like that, to a fundraiser by a shooting range at a Trub Bedminster golf course. So I was like, yeah, you don't have to ask me twice. Of course I want to go to this. It's going to be different than anything that I expected that I normally go to. And I don't have to fly to get there. So I go there and I can tell lots of stories. Oh man, can I tell you some stories about that are a little off track?
No, go for it. So, we're catching up with what you've been doing. People will see that you do more than just, stay at home and, you know, try not to do anything to harm the universe. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I can tell you that this Trump Bedminster golf course is as different from Greenwich Village as pick a country somewhere else in the world.
Wait. So this is a golf course. And I got to throw this in there that our attorney general is trying to steal, in my opinion, from Donald Trump because they feel that he overestimated his real estate value, which is what most realtors do. I used to be in the real estate business, but that's a story for another day. Go ahead. I just wanted to, you know, couch that for our listeners. Go ahead, Josh.
So it was a great event there. I mean, one of the things, like, of course, it starts with the Pledge of Allegiance. And it's been a while since, I mean, in grade school, I had that. And I'm like, yep, this is a different culture because when I teach at NYU, I don't know what would happen if I said to the class, let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance. In any case.
Wait, Josh, I gotta jump in. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for this. If you were to ask, they would probably be baffled because in today's school systems, a lot of kids know nothing about the Pledge of Allegiance. Unfortunately, I've experienced it myself. Go ahead, continue your story.
So there's the whole event, and I can tell you about that. It was really wonderful, and I'm meeting all these people. On the way out, I have to catch the last train back in the city, and my friend's going to give me a ride there. When we're walking out, my friend with whom I went, he knew the owner. He knows the owner of the range who was there. And we go up to say goodbye to him and his wife, and we're talking, and he says the Trump is there. He just saw him going up the stairs. Apparently, where Trump stays is right above the ballroom where we were holding, where this event was. And he's trying to figure out, can he get Trump to come back downstairs? And the person who gave the keynote or the opening address was a two-star general. And they were saying, maybe that's the person to send up most. Okay, so I say, you know, Trump said that he's smarter than the generals. I'm not sure that's the best person to send up. And at my table at this dinner was this really attractive blonde woman. I say, send up the blonde. And they're like, that's a really good idea. I say, yeah, I teach leadership. I work on how to motivate people. But we had to leave. And the next day, I got an email. It was the mass email to went out to everyone. And it was like, thank you all for coming. And there was a picture of the owner that I was just speaking to, shaking Trump's hand. Trump came down afterward. If I'd figured out a way to stay, I would have gotten to shake Trump's hand. And while I was, so that was a very interesting thing to me. And it turns out, like, what were the odds of him being there? So he'd been arraigned earlier that day, and he wasn't in a good mood, apparently, early in Manhattan. So that it made sense why he was there that night. And I really wish I could have shaken his hand. In any case, while I was there, I was talking about what I do, about the leadership stuff. And someone said, do you work with the Leadership Institute? I'd never heard of it. So it's a group basically in DC, and they teach conservatives to be more politically operative and more effective. So I went there, I found the site and registered for Conservative 101 or Conservatism 101, I think it was called. And it was a class of, I don't know how many sessions, it's just online, you know, a bunch of videos to watch. And it talks about what conservatism is, its history in the US, what it opposes, the big thinkers and so forth. And I didn't just do the course. They referred to a lot of stuff. So I read Friedrich Hayek. I'd already watched Milton Friedman. I just finished Russell Kirk's The Conservative Mind, which is this huge, it's 500 pages, although I listened to it. So it's 20 hours and of conservative thought from Burke to, I think, T.S. Eliot. It was written in the 50s, although it was updated into 1986, I think. And I was amazed at how much, I'm listening, a lot of it I'm looking for just kind of knowledge, but a lot of it I'm looking at it to, how does it relate to stewardship? How does it relate to the environment? And I can't believe how much of it resonates very much with the environment. I mean, pick almost any of the things that I just talked about, and I can tell you how I found that it works with stewardship. And it started making me wonder, why do conservatives, I think most people out, if I stopped a random person on the street, I think a lot of them would say the environment, sustainability, that's a liberal issue and conservatives oppose it. Something like that. I'm sure everyone's unique, but why does that, to the extent that that view is out there, why does that come about? And I think that the information that there were issues with the environment, I think came from academia, came from scientists generally in academia. And I think that they thought, all right, here's a problem. Let's also come up with some solutions. And I think they would tend to be liberal. I mean, most people, I don't think it's any secret that most university campuses are more liberal than conservative. And I don't think they realize, they're probably thinking, let's come up with solutions that work. They're not thinking, let's come up with liberal solutions, so let's come up with conservative solutions. They're just thinking the way they think, and they're not thinking much about it. And I don't think that they thought that the proposals that they came up with generally are going to sound like increasing government and are going to get conservatives to think, we don't want that. And I think conservatives generally, and this is, by the way, this is a hypothesis. I can't prove this. If people disagree, I'd love to hear from them. But it seems to me that
this is interesting because, and I had mentioned that when we opened up the second block of the show, I had said, are you beginning to see things from a conservative prism? You're seeing what we're being saying, because as you mentioned, a lot of the conservative beliefs, when you look at the environment, I mean, they would be in tune. It's just not at the extreme spectrum that most liberals take it. And we had a conversation before when you came on, when they were having Earth Day, and you saw all these kids out and about shouting, saying, you got to do this and you got to do that. And if you were to stop them and really ask them about what are your beliefs, what do you stand for, they wouldn't necessarily be able to tell you. But they get caught up in the moment. They think that this is the thing to do. This makes me in part of the in crowd, so I'm going to do it. But to really and completely understand it, this is what you're doing and this is why you're doing it, is not about trying to deny someone or to keep someone from doing something that they want to do or enjoy. No one enjoys pollution. I don't think they do, throwing garbage on the ground. But when you go to, as you mentioned once before, Greenwich Village, which you find a lot of, I would say, liberals, it's like a cesspool with garbage and filth. So if these same people that are there, that are preaching to us about save the climate, we want to save the climate. Okay, why aren't you saving the climate when it comes to that? These same people saying, save the climate. We have too many people here in the world. We need to stop eating meat. Why aren't you saying that at the border? You're saying just the opposite. So they say one thing and they do something completely different, and then they want to be preachy about it. So I ask you again, are you starting to see things? And to me, I mean, it seems as if though you are, you're looking at things the way a conservative, or the way people say conservative, look at things. Your response, Josh.
I would say the way I think of it is that because stewardship is such a universal human value, and we have, as stewardship among others, do unto others as well. The way I put it is that I believe that I'm more conservative than conservatives, more liberal than liberals, and more libertarian than libertarians.
Wait. Did you just say that you're more conservative than conservatives?
Yes.
In what way?
Because I want a government that protects life, liberty, and property. And if you're promoting pollution, then you're promoting a government that does not protect life, liberty, and property. That was way too glib. But if someone is allowing their government and not saying, wait, my government is not protecting life, liberty, and property, and not doing anything about it, profiting from it, and sustaining that. And that's a conservative problem.
But are you only conservative? If you say you're more conservative than the average conservative, is it just when it comes to that particular viewpoint or across the board? Because you can say I'm conservative when it comes to protecting life, liberty, and property. But then there's a whole spectrum of things that conservatives look at, you know, that we would say this is why this identifies me as being a conservative, you know, family values. So are you only saying that in that aspect or the entire umbrella of things?
Certainly in that aspect, mm-hmm. Not the entire umbrella of things, but okay. There are a lot of things that I think that there's a lot of places that are wedge issues where different people have different views. And I like the democratic process of resolving. Right. Even take any two people, even if they agree on a lot of different things, no two people agree on everything. There's always disagreement. I don't think me and my mom disagree on lots of stuff. And that's always the case. So the point is not to get everybody to agree. It's to get everybody to live together. And I'm a big fan of let's say, I mean, we're always talking about guns. So Second Amendment, there's a lot of ways to interpret things. And I think, you know, I promote the democratic process for how to resolve these things, not how to resolve once and for all, but how to live together despite differences of opinion.
Right. Okay. Now we're up against a commercial break, but this is really interesting. I didn't know where this conversation was going to go tonight, but I think that we're in a good place. And I think, Andrew, possibly, and I could be wrong, that we have a budding conservative here on our show. Maybe he's a closeted conservative, but I get what you're saying, that on some things, especially when it comes to the climate, you're more conservative than the average conservative. And I would submit to you that I think a lot of conservatives are conservative when it comes to the environment and climate change, but I don't think it's to that extreme. So I think that they take a back seat because they don't want to be viewed as these crazy people who are out there hugging trees. But this has been a really good conversation. And Andrew, I want us to pick it up after you take us to commercial break.
Yeah, it's very interesting indeed. Just the conservative side of it, let alone him saying he's more liberal than a lot of the liberals. And you think about that, and where a lot of our big cities are headed, that makes a lot of sense, because you look at the pollution, the trash, the garbage, the drug use, the needles, everything else that comes along with that. We're seeing that a lot in these Democrat cities as well. So certainly a lot of issues to be addressed as far as the climate goes for both conservatives and Democrats. My stance is always, like Josh was saying, it's a lot easier to convince someone that they want a clean property, they want clean water, they want clean air. Getting people to convince that the world is ending or something like that, it's just not a realistic thing, because people are always going to point at other countries like China and India, say, look at all the pollution that they're doing, they're not holding back, what's my little contribution going to do in the big picture? So yeah, I like how Josh just breaks it down, makes it a little simpler for people, and can give you some things to relate about when it comes to the climate and the environment. If you're looking for better sleep, focus, and energy, check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator of nutritional supplements for cell health. Healthy Cell vitamins work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Absorb a healthier lifestyle with Healthy Cell's pill-free vitamins. You can go to healthycell.com or americaoutloud.shop. Check out the great products and save with Healthy Cell using the promo code OUTLOUD. We'll be back with more After Dark with Robin Andrew.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deep. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud. 58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud for 25% off.
Andrew, what can I say? We're the last half of the show. There is so much that I want to talk about and discuss with Josh. Whenever Josh comes on, we always find ourselves running up against the clock because we start heading in one direction with our conversation, and then we end up at a completely different direction or when it's time to end. But I just want to go back to what we were talking about during the second block of the show. And we were talking about the conservative values and principles and me saying, you know, is Josh becoming a closeted conservative, or are those, were those beliefs always there? And he just living by them. And one thing that I want to point out is that when you had mentioned that people would say that conservatives aren't concerned about the environment. And Josh, you and I, we've spoken, shared a meal with you. You've come on the show and you spoke with Andrew. And I think what we see happening is that we have the media, whom I've always said, it's not the media that I used to work in when I was a journalist years ago. They definitely have an agenda. And unfortunately, they're shaping the narrative. They're shaping our beliefs and what we think and what we see and hear. And I think that's very dangerous in a society when you don't have a free press. And I've said, I've come to the conclusion that the media in its current form needs to be shut down. Now, one of our co-hosts and guests, Heather Robinson of the New York Post, she's also a journalist, and she said that she thinks that's a bit extreme. But I've been explaining to her that I'm not saying to shut down the media altogether, but I'm saying in its current form, it is not a free press, but an operative of a political party, be it Democrat or Republican. I think that at this juncture, it is an operative, a propaganda arm of the Democrat Party, and they regurgitate the talking points of these Democrat politicians. Because why would you think or say that conservatives are not concerned about the environment? I'm not saying that you say that, Andrew, but I'm saying as a whole, this is a narrative that they shaped. When they talk about the environment, they'll start laughing at conservatives and saying, oh, they're not concerned about it. No, we're concerned about the air we breathe. We're concerned about the future. We want to leave the world a better place in the way we found it. We want to be able to contribute, better stewards, as you had mentioned. But if you're listening to the mainstream media, they twist this and say that they're not concerned with it. And that's just not true. We are concerned with it, but it's not to the extreme that they want us to believe or the extreme that they're putting out there. Hence, you have a lot of kids, young people, running around, hugging trees, running around with misinformation, not being able to explain their platform, but it feels good. I want to be part of this movement. I want to get out. I want to yell and scream. I want to point my finger at the other side and say that you're wrong. You're just wrong and you don't get it. We don't want to hear from you. And that's not it at all. And I've always said that if we had someone like you out front speaking these values, speaking these truths, saying this is what I live by, I'm not saying that it's for you, but this is what I live by, and these are the things that I believe. I do think that people would stop, listen, and say, hey, I get it. I see what he's saying. We all want to save the world. We want to save our environment. And this is how we can, these are the steps we could take to get to it. And I'm guessing, Josh, that's what your workshops are about. Is that true?
Yeah, well, you said a lot there. And I can't help but think the word, I didn't make this word up, but tribalism. And I feel like our political situation is very tribal. People stick with their tribe sometimes more than think about, you know, it's much easier to say, what are the other people in my tribe doing? Okay, I'll do that too. Then think about it and say, what is, disentangle some complex things sometimes. And you're going to send a lot more newspapers promoting debate or saying, like, look at this argument between these people, rather than, I don't know, whatever else, you know, saying there's agreement. Yeah, saying there's agreement won't sell many papers. What was I going to say? That was commenting on something you said earlier, or earlier in that statement. But what was the last, what did you end on?
Well, I was saying, what do you believe that this is what's happening with people just jumping on the bandwagon and saying that conservatives don't care about the environment because we're not taking it to that level of extremism as we see on the left?
Yeah, I wouldn't look at it as, I don't think of it as extremism. I think of it as how it's framed. Because when the alarm came out decades ago, it came from academia, and so did the proposed solutions. I think conservatives probably looked at the solutions and said, these don't make sense. You just want to increase government. And then they could fairly say, if you really believe in these solutions, you would be doing the things that you're saying, but you're not. So you're not doing these things. So if you're not doing them, you don't believe the reasons. So why would you do it? Well, probably to increase government, probably to achieve what you've always wanted to achieve. That's a fair conclusion, but that means that conservatives, we're not looking at the causes. We're not looking at what's going on. And now people probably there were thinking of, is climate change really happening? You know, decades ago, there was a lot of debate about that. There's still some debate, a lot less now than before. But to me, the issue is like Cancer Alley. How can we allow cancer? How can we allow a region of our country to just say, well, there's cancer there. That's the way it is. And there's other areas called sacrifice zones. That it's like, they're so far gone, we can't do anything about it. It's like triage. You know, when two soldiers come in, if you can, and there's only enough to fix one, you got to figure out which one you pick. That's triage. And we're doing that with our own people. That's a problem. And so I'm not going to let conservatives off the hook that just because I believe liberals did frame it in a way that it would be difficult not to react and say, you guys are probably just doing a power play. But that doesn't mean that there weren't problems. And it might not even be the way that the liberals framed it. Because the way I see it, there's a problem here now. And we, like, how to deal with people within a nation hurting other people within a nation, that doesn't take science. That's something we've been struggling with as human beings for millennia. And to me, it's the framing of it. One of the big ones is, are we destroying life? Are we allowing people to destroy life, liberty, and property without consent? But no one's framed it that way. So when it's framed that way, I think a conservative, well, I hope anyone would say, we got to fix that problem. It's happening right here, right now, not some future date. And so that's why I think that yes, liberals put it in a way that it looks like a bitter pill to swallow for anyone who's not one of them. They don't live by their values. So without the integrity and the credibility, it's easy to doubt them. That said, the conservatives could have not just taken it at that. Now, everyone, whether liberal, conservative, or whatever, libertarian or anything else, we're all living, we recognize that we're doing the polluting. And right. That polluting hurts people.
Yeah. Right. And I'll say this. I'm sorry. I'll say this when you say about, you know, conservatives just allowing it. And Andrew and I, we've spoken about this before. We actually speak about it just about on every show, how conservatives, they do sit back. They don't know how to fight. And if they do, they're afraid to. They just want to say, hey, here I am, and I'm a conservative, and allowing others to define them. So although I blame the media in trying to shape the narrative and putting out a lot of misinformation, on the same bandwidth, you have conservatives who will not come out and speak out and say, no, this is not what we're about. This is not what we believe in. Because going back to what you said, and I think this is so true, and I never thought about it, life, liberty, and property that's being destroyed. And who gave you the consent to do it? If you protect that, you're protecting everyone. But we're sitting back and we're saying, hey, we're for life, liberty, and property, but what are you doing to protect it? What is your position? Why don't you stand up and allow your voice to be heard? So there's room to blame on both sides. But I'll go back to, I think the liberals have just taken it and pushed it, and conservatives just sat back and said nothing about it. Andrew, you're about to say something?
Oh, very well said. I was just going to ask Josh about the current climate in the world today and what we're seeing. Obviously, we're seeing a lot more war breaking out. You look at the damage that war's probably done to the climate over the last 100, 200 years. Perhaps it's been the most destructive thing of anything. I mean, you look at the World War II, all the bombings and buildings being turned to rubble. And we're seeing the same thing now over in Ukraine and the Middle East, over in Israel and Gaza, and a lot of death and destruction and buildings being taken down, turned to rubble, which I'm sure there's a lot of garbage inside. And just imagine how bad the air quality is and things like that. Josh, does that concern you that we're still dropping so many bombs around the world? And obviously, that cannot be good for the climate.
Yeah, this. So I don't want to oversimplify, but I'm going to give a sustainability perspective on what you're talking about. And again, I want to make it clear, this is not the only thing, because people disagree in lots of different ways. But if you and your culture live unsustainably, that means that you are running out of resources where you live. You can either choose to become sustainable and not need other resources, or you're going to have to get those resources from somewhere else. If you have to get your resources from somewhere else, you're going to encroach on other people's territories. I mean, to some extent, you can trade, but if collectively the trading group is unsustainable, then you have to go and take resources from others. We've been doing this for 10,000 years. And that means, and if they're living unsustainably too, they're going to have to get other resources too. So you're going to have fights over resources. I'm not saying that's the only thing that's happening, but as long as people live unsustainably, they will necessarily have to conflict with each other over resources. Again, lots of other stuff going on. But that's a major reason to live sustainably, because otherwise you have to take from others. And we've been doing that for a long time. And you can trace the rise of living unsustainably with how much the rise of empires, because this, I would call this imperialism or colonialism. And it's fine when you're trading with people, but when you're going in and invading, that's coercion. So I don't think that if we don't live sustainably, I don't see how we can avoid conflict.
Well, that's interesting, Andrew, that you would point that out, the war, and how that also can be impacting the environment, because we do see that there are some on both the left and the right. And I hate to bring it down to, you know, political terms, that are for war, for this continued war in between Russia and Ukraine. And there are others that are saying we need to stop it. But I doubt seriously that they're looking at it from a climate, how it's impacting the climate. They're not doing it right now. That's not to say that later on that there won't be a push. But for the most part, you don't hear that. And I wonder if someone were to bring it up on the left, would we have people jumping on the bandwagon saying, oh, that's right, we need to stop this because look at the impact it's going to have on the environment today and definitely years from now. We don't hear that because people, they're not good stewards and they're not looking at how this comes, how all of this comes to play with the protecting life, liberty, and property. Wow, that's really a great analogy to tie that into that, Josh. And I think I'm going to start looking at saying that more to see what type of feedback I'll get when I put this, when I, you know, have this conversation with other liberals or people who are so passionate like John Kerry about the planet. Because I doubt seriously anyone is looking at it from that viewpoint. They're just looking at it from, you can't do this and you can't do that. And I think a lot of conservatives who aren't in tune are tapped into the environment because they fear that it's something wacky coming from the left, as opposed to looking at what this is one of the principles that, you know, we stand by, you know, protecting life, liberty, and property and making certain that it's not destroyed. And then making certain that you're giving back, you're giving, so if you're going to take, you're giving back just as much. I don't think anyone is looking at it from that viewpoint. But I think that if conservatives were to just focus in on it, they say, wait a minute, you know, this is an issue that they're pushing, but we're more concerned about it when you think about it than maybe they are. Not that they're not, but they're looking, they're not looking at it in a judicious way, so to speak. They're looking at it from, you got to stop this, you got to stop that, knowing that when they tell us we're going to take away, we're going to say, no, you can't, because you're trying to get too much government involved. But when you look at it, it's just rarest term, just break it down to the bare bone. This is what we're saying. This is what's being said. I think more people would respond and get on board. Gosh, I cannot believe that we're all out of time, Andrew. And whenever we bring Josh on, we have these conversations, as I said, when we opened up this block, and it just goes in so many different directions. And as always, we have to bring him back. What do you say, Andrew?
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we can get him back before another year. I mean, it's been almost a year since we had him on. It's a little too long. Hopefully we'll get Josh on sometime in the next few months. Definitely when his book gets closer to coming out, we'll bring him on to talk about that. I know we mentioned before the show that perhaps Rob or I might be included in the book. We'll discuss that more in the future. But thank you so much to Joshua Spodek for coming on once again. You can go to joshuaspodek.com, joshuaspodek.com/podcast if you want to listen to his show. As I said, he's a PhD astrophysicist, number one best-selling author, TEDx speaker. This guy's resume is very impressive, and we always appreciate him coming on the show and hanging out with us. Thank you all for joining us on After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, which is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you stream, or go to AmericaOutLoud.news. We'll see you next time. Remember, stand for something or fall for nothing.